In 2007, TV network CBS dropped 40 kids in the middle of the New Mexico desert as part of a brand new reality show. These kids would have to build their own society from scratch. And if this sounds like Lord of the Flies to you, well, it was meant to.
We were on this mission together. We were going to prove to the world that we could make a better society than adults could.
I'm Josh Gwynn, and I want to know what this wild TV experiment was really about. Split Screen, Kid Nation, a six-part podcast from CBC. Available now.
It's never good when critics can sum up your performance as a politician with a famous sports blooper.
Yeah, to use a good Canadian analogy, it was like having a breakaway on an open net and missing the net.
Bergeron fans on a pass. Stephen steals and he'll ice it. Or at least I thought he was going to until he blew it. That's unbelievable.
And that's why, despite, yes, increasing the Conservative Party seat count, and yes, despite forming a strong opposition and taking a liberal majority down to a minority, Conservative Party leader Andrew Scheer is still fighting for his job. Scheer survived a caucus meeting last week that ran for hours, only to emerge and meet the press and walk right into a perfect example of exactly what many in his party think cost them the election.
Around issues like same-sex marriage, you are still not giving your personal view. So my question for you is, do you believe that being gay is a sin?
Look, this is, we made it very clear during the election, in the last few months and years, our party is inclusive. We believe in the equality of rights of all Canadians.
We
are,
my
personal opinion is that I respect the rights of every single Canadian.
It was an answer that tried to please both sides and ended up pleasing no one. And it was a perfect picture of the division within the Conservative Party right now. Will Scheer move further towards social conservative issues to save his job, even if it costs him the next election? Is he willing to put his personal beliefs in front of voters, knowing that many of them will never trust him unless he does? And can the Conservative Party as a whole unite around a direction that could help them win what should, in theory, be a very winnable next election, and an election that could come sooner than they think? I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. This is The Big Story. Stephen Marr is a contributing editor at Maclean's. Hi, Stephen.
How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, and for those of us, which unfortunately doesn't include me, who were able to kind of tune out for a bit after the election, can you explain what happened to Andrew Scheer in the wake of the Liberal minority win?
A lot of people are very disappointed in the Conservative Party that the party didn't do better. Not long after the election, Peter McKay at a forum in Washington said that Mr. Scheer had missed an empty net, basically, using a hockey analogy. There's a widespread feeling in the Conservative Party that Scheer was not able to do as well as the party could have, particularly when you look at some of the vulnerabilities of the Liberals. I mean, this is a campaign that started with news about an RCMP inquiry into the SNC-Lavalin affair, and it was then followed with the brownface and blackface incidents. So Trudeau was vulnerable, and the Conservative campaign was not able to take advantage of those vulnerabilities.
Tell me about last week's caucus meeting specifically. What do we know about what happened in there?
Well, we know that it lasted 7.5 hours, which is a long meeting.
Yeah.
The first 2.5 hours were taken up with a sort of procedural business involving something called the Reform Act, which was brought in by Michael Chong in the previous government as a way of empowering backbenchers. And there was a key vote where the Conservatives caucus, they had to stand up. It wasn't a private ballot, a private secret ballot. They had to stand up and vote to give themselves the power to remove the leader. So it wasn't a vote to actually remove him, but to maintain that theoretical power. I'm told that only 18 people stood up, certainly fewer than 20. So Scheer sort of survived that test, as everyone sort of expected he would.
Right.
MPs, even those who would like to get rid of Scheer, would be reluctant to do so in a caucus revolt. because they would then be accused of having ignored the will of party members who selected Scheer.
Right. That makes sense.
Yeah. And it's true. If they decapitated him in a caucus meeting, then people could say, well, I voted for him. You know, why are you ignoring the membership? And there is a mechanism in April, and a lot, everything that's happening in the Conservative Party between now and the convention in April is going to be geared around that. Whether Scheer can get enough votes to survive. He likely needs around 70% of the votes of delegates. And there are a lot of people in the party, I think more than 30%, who think that the problems with Scheer are not going to get better before the next election.
Can you try to sort of sum up the division about the problems with Andrew Scheer? Why do some people in the party think he missed the empty net, essentially?
Well, if you look at polling, it shows that Mr. Scheer became less popular as Canadians got to know him better, which is not what I expected would happen. I thought that Canadians would find him to be a mild and pleasant man. But it turned out that as the campaign went on, his disapproval numbers kept getting higher and higher. Now, why is that? One thing that a lot of conservatives believe is that his reluctance to discuss his position on same-sex marriage is causing a lot of problems for him. The other policy issue that caused problems at the doorsteps, and particularly in Ontario and Quebec, is the environment. The climate change policy that the Conservatives brought forward got very bad reviews. The people who looked at it closely said that it would increase our emissions rather than reducing them in comparison to the Liberal plan. And the other thing is, there's campaign mechanics. At the end of the campaign, the Conservatives sent their troops to the wrong places. They seemed not to know which ridings were competitive and which ridings were not competitive. That is unusual for a modern political campaign with all of the data, with all of the polling. It's kind of surprising, and it raises serious questions about the competence of Mr. Scheer's team. For instance, at the end of the campaign, they were sending resources to Vaughan Woodbridge, where they were not in contention. Nova Scotia, where I'm from, I know that they spent a lot of resources trying to get country singer George Canyon elected in central Nova, where they did not have a realistic shot of winning. Meanwhile, the next riding, Cumberland Colchester, they lost by 500 votes, and they didn't send the troops there. So there's evidence to suggest that in the sort of get out the vote and polling world, where Mr. Harper's party, Stephen Harper's party, used to be very good at this stuff, that at some point the Conservatives have lost the plot. So you have these policy questions, and then you have a sort of competence question, and then you have a kind of personality question about Mr. Scheer. So there's, I think, a very strong case to be made that they would likely do better with someone else. There is a counter argument that often leaders do better on the second shot. You know, if you look at Jack Layton, for example, over multiple elections, people got to know him. He got better at it. And eventually, you know, voters decide to reward you. I don't think that's the case with Scheer, but there is a counter argument.
Well, I wanted to ask you specifically about the way the party is dealing with his personal beliefs, because I thought you really summed it up well in McLean's. And if you could maybe describe the dynamics in the Conservative Party right now over what I guess has kind of been referred to as Andrew Scheer's personal beliefs versus political.
Right. So there's a divide in that you have some conservatives, including a lot of conservatives in Ontario and Quebec, who on the subject of same-sex marriage in particular are saying, why are we talking about this? Why can't you just tell us how you feel about it and get past this? Because Scheer's critics, the liberals or journalists, keep saying, well, what's your personal view? And after this very difficult caucus meeting, a reporter said, well, do you think that homosexuality is a sin? Is that why you won't go to a pride parade? And he said he didn't answer the question. He won't say whether he thinks that being gay is sinful. It appears that this is because he would feel like a hypocrite, that he is a serious Catholic, and he does believe that this kind of behavior is sinful. And that's why he can't go to a pride parade, If that is correct, he is out of step with Canadians. The polling shows that only about 10% of Canadians now are opposed to same-sex marriage. There's been an enormous shift in the last 15 years since this sort of moved, it became a political hot potato when Paul Martin was prime minister. And once it was legalized, everyone has basically got used to it.
Yeah.
And we accept it. Doug Ford went to a pride parade. All kinds of people accept this kind of community event as a way of showing support for people that it's meaningful to them, which is how I feel about it. Our neighbors or friends and neighbors who are LGBTQ, it's meaningful for them to have the community come out and say, hey, we got your backs.
Right.
And Scheer won't do that. So some of his supporters are saying, well, why are you badgering him? His personal views are his personal views, and it's got nothing to do with how he's run the country. And that is a perspective. But on the other hand, if you want to become prime minister of the country, can we really think that your most strongly held beliefs won't influence your thinking? So I am sympathetic to the people who are suspicious of him on these questions.
I'm Laura Palmer, host of Island Crime. Season 6, Sweethearts, is the story of three teenage girls who were all murdered in Victoria, Canada, within about 12 months.
So she was scared. Something out there scared her.
You've just created the playground where predators can really thrive.
She was a 16-year-old girl. She was a sweetheart.
Listen to Sweethearts at frequencypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get podcasts.
Find your frequency.
Can you explain, like, I understand the one side of the Conservative Party who must be saying, like, look, just get modern and recognize that this is an issue that Canadians are settled on and let's move on. But there's a force inside that party that doesn't want him to do that. And I understand that they have their own personal beliefs, but I'm wondering what kind of political argument they can make that Scheer needs to stay and align himself with the social conservatives.
So often these are people who are associated with the Right to Life movement. So they're anti-abortion activists, and they are an increasingly powerful force in the Conservative Party of Canada and the Ontario Progressive Conservative Party. And they, in fact, made Mr. Scheer leader during the – there were a couple of social conservative candidates, Brad Trost and Pierre Lemieux. Their support went to Mr. Scheer during the leadership. Similarly, Tanya Granick-Allen, an activist in Ontario, helped make Doug Ford leader. So they are a powerful force. And when I read what they write about these things, they believe that if only politicians said what they believed and advocated for these positions more effectively or more forcefully, then the public might come around. I believe that there is a sort of unrealistic quality to that analysis. And it reminds me somewhat of the inevitable post-election analysis from the Socialist Caucus of the NDP. Whatever the outcome, you can count on the left-wing NDPers saying, well, we would have done better if we proposed nationalizing the banks.
Right.
Similarly, you have these militant social conservatives who, after every election, say, well, we would have done better if we'd promised to take action on abortion. So they have an increasing clout in the party. And I think that Mr. Scheer may be tempted to move closer to them because they can rally support for him for this leadership review. It's not clear that he will do this, but if he does, in order to engage with them more fully, start to communicate stronger social conservative positions, I think that could be a risk for the party, in that it will be associated more firmly in the minds of middle-of-the-road Canadians with sort of minority views on these questions.
Well, surely Trudeau and Singh would love to run the next election against a Conservative Party that's embracing the kind of specters that they tried to raise about them in this one, right?
I am sure that the Liberals are sitting back and praying that Andrew Scheer hangs on as Conservative leader. Because as Peter McKay said, he did kind of miss an empty net in the last election. And they can just continue to paint him as a social conservative who won't discuss, won't be honest with Canadians about how he feels about things. I find it there's a painful quality to watching it. I think Andrew Scheer is a nice man. He's a pleasant sort of character. I'm sure he works without any problems with people who are gay. It's not like he's not a bigot, I don't think, but he can't bring himself to say, well, yes, I used to oppose same-sex marriage and my church says that's wrong, but I see that, there are ways he could deal with this that he just does not want to.
Well, Trudeau's a Catholic too, right? He's dealt with it.
Yes. Yes, that's right. But now also their base is different. So Trudeau does not have to worry about alienating social conservative supporters. And I know if you talk to conservative politicians off the record and conservative organizers and say, you know, have you been to a pride parade? Did your candidate go to a pride parade? They do get pushback. They will tell you that when they do that, some of their supporters will say, well, you lost my support. I don't believe in that. That's wrong. So, I mean, Mr. Scheer has to deal with a base that Mr. Trudeau doesn't have to deal with.
Right.
And Mr. Trudeau, as a self-proclaimed feminist, has curried favor with, you know, abortion rights activists and also with LGBTQ community. He moved the party away from, you know, it used to be that you could be anti-abortion and a member of the Liberal Party, and he's moved the party to polarize along these lines.
I kind of feel badly for the position that Andrew Scheer is in, because he may have to move in a way to keep his job that might make him less likely to win the next election and thus put his job at further risk. Like, is there a way out of this for him? Can he walk a line?
I think it's very difficult unless things go terribly for the Liberals in the next 6 months. Right? We are all thinking the conventional wisdom at the moment is that Mr. Trudeau has a stable minority. He can sit back and take his time and proceed in an organized manner to meet Parliament and proceed with his agenda. And that's the likeliest thing. But if something terrible happens, if the RCMP announced that they are investigating SNC-Lavalin, if you have if you decide to dress up in blackface again or go to some foreign country and behave foolishly again,
right.
His track record is mixed, right?
Yeah.
So there are things that could happen that would put the focus back on the Liberals and would make the Conservatives feel that they can't afford to change their leader in a minority parliament. So in a way, I suspect that Scheer is doomed as leader, although he can hang on and hope that events transpire that change the circumstances for him, that basically the Liberals, that the Trudeau government messes up in some important way.
Right. Well, the kind of sword hanging over all this is that technically, I guess we could have an election anytime after the throne speech, right?
Yes. The government conceivably could fall on the throne speech and we could be back into an election immediately. That is never the way these things play out.
Thank God.
And no, I don't think we're ready for another election. And voters would punish any party that, would be seen to have recklessly brought out another an unnecessary election. I don't think there's going to be an election before October 19th, 2021. Which is the date at which the class of 2015, which is the majority of MPs in this parliament, have vested their pensions. So none of them are going to want to go for another election before they cross that finish line.
That's a very pragmatic way to determine when we have another election.
Well, politicians are just people, and like anyone, they worry about how they're going to look after themselves in their retirement. So I suspect that they will suddenly feel a lot braver on confidence votes after that happens.
And I guess we'll see in April if Mr. Scheer survives.
I think it's going to be very interesting to be in Toronto when they count the votes that day. I'm going to put that in my calendar.
Thanks, Stephen.
Thank you.
Stephen Marr, contributing editor at Maclean's. That was The Big Story. You want more? They're on the website at thebigstorypodcast.ca. They're also in your favorite podcast app. You want to talk to us? You know where to find us, at TheBigStoryFPN on Twitter. If you want our whole network, we are at Frequency Pods on Twitter, on Facebook, and on Instagram.
you would like to find all of our shows, you can go to frequencypodcastnetwork.com, or you could find them everywhere you get podcasts. If you do have the chance to give us a rating, we would very much appreciate 5 stars. I'm Jordan Heath-Rawlings. Thanks for listening. We'll talk tomorrow.